You've been covering abortion access for decades.
There were two motives that I found that many of the figures had that really surprised me. One of them was this guy, Paul Herring, I talked to, who wrote a first draft of the Hyde Amendment, this former IRS attorney. He kept trying to convert me to Catholicism by telling me the most important thing is we go to heaven. I heard that time and again. So many of these men were telling me that they worked against abortion because they believed it was going to help them get through the door of heaven. I thought, oh my gosh, they have put women through hell so that they can go to heaven. And they have put the rest of us in hell too, if you look at the news stories today, right? And the other thing that surprised me is just how much the anti-abortion movement was a reaction to the civil rights movement. Jennifer Holland, the historian, writes about how they created a civil rights movement for white people, a way that they could use social justice rhetoric and the right to life to avoid thinking about whiteness, avoid confronting white supremacy, and instead save the fetus, who they always imagined as white.
Well, it is a remarkable book, Killers of Roe. It's a revelation and also funny at times. Killers of Roe, My Investigation into the Mysterious Death of Abortion Rights. The book has just come out. Amy's abortion access correspondent for The Nation magazine. That does it for our show. Happy birthday to Georgia Track.
This is KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operation and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communication Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Policy and Governance Committee meets on the third Tuesday of March, June, September, and December at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if the meeting is being held.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8 a.m. Next up is Wednesday Talk Radio with Jacqueline Keeler.
In the current circus, if you're seeking respect and attention, if you're in need of a gig that'll help you feel big, come with me and put some folks in detention. Just last week was kind of rough. I put a kid in cuffs and zip-tied a woman to a van. We can sneak around town hunting working folks down. I hear they get a great benefit plan. Join ICE, boy, ain't it nice. Join ICE, take my advice. If you're lacking control and authority, come with me and hunt down minorities. Join ICE. Well, I failed the academy, the cops weren't having me, the army didn't sound that fun. So I found me a paramilitary operation that was keen to hand me a gun. See, I got picked on in school, I never felt that cool. There's a hole in my soul that just rages. All the women turned me down, they told me I was a clown. Well, won't you look at me now, I'm putting folks in cages. At ICE, they got great hours. Join ICE for respect and power. They got a sign-on bonus of 50 grand. They're in need of you needing to feel like a man. Join ICE. Join
ICE. Good morning. This is Jacqueline Keeler and good morning, Portland. Today is Wednesday, March 11th, and you're listening to 90.7 FM, KBOO, and we are listener-supported. Volunteer power and broadcasting from the heart of the occupied lands of the Multnomah, Kathlamet, and Clackamas bands of Chinook. And, do have some good news to start today also, regarding ICE. The judge was recently limited the federal agent's use of tear gas on protesters at the Oregon ICE facility. So that's good news that's happening. The not so good news, as you may have seen, not get away from, is of course the horrible things that are happening in the Middle East. And Trump has started a war, and apparently drown out the Epstein files. People are dying in the Middle East, sadly, and tragically. And so we're going to talk about that today. I don't know if you've been watching the news about what's going on in Tehran and Operation, quote, Epic Fury, which many people, as I mentioned, are calling Operation Epstein Fury. And we are seeing it here in Oregon as well. Of course, here, you know, we're seeing it with the gas prices rising. I think it's now hit an average of $3.95 a gallon. Grocery bills climbing. The Strait of Hormuz has been all shipping is stopped through there. I understand about one-fifth the world's oil goes through there, oil and gas. This is not just, this cost is not just measured in dollars or cents. It's also measured in the lives of people in the Middle East, of children, of, there's a horrible bombing that happened by the United States of a girls' school. Over 150 people died, most of them young girls. And also, it looks like Trump wants to come for our own neighbors, students, and our own children. He's been talking about a draft for his war, his illegal war, which has not ever been, he didn't bring his case to Congress. We still are confused. The administration is confused in why it is conducting this war. And so this is something I covered last week on my Thursday show. And we're also seeing that the administration is not just acting on traditional geopolitics, but it seems to be also fueled by a fundamentalist evangelical interpretation of the end times. Yes, the sentence I never thought I'd have to say. And it's a holy war logic that treats the Middle East as just a chessboard for biblical fulfillment. And so we're going to talk about that today, actually. And please do call in if you have any opinions or thoughts about that. I want to ask the hard question, which is, are we prepared to let our youth, be the foot soldiers of this illegal war, which appears to be rooted in religious prophecy, right? Our congressional delegation members, Representative Maxine Dexter, and others have called these strikes unconstitutional, which they are. So if the war doesn't have the consent of the people through Congress, how can Trump be sending other people's children to war through a draft, a proposed draft? And yet, of course, there is a meme going around on social media, Draft Baron, right? And there's even a website, Draft Baron. He's not sending his own children, right? They're all making money off of this. But he wants to send everyone else's children. And if this really, truly does have something to do with Epstein, it's just to cover his own sins, right? He's going to try to make himself look like a war hero. Mr. Draft Dodger, Mr. Bone Spurs, is going to try to, did he get out of the draft like three or five times? And here he's going to start a war. And this war, costing us up to $1 billion a day, right? And yet we have no money for healthcare, right? We can't. They couldn't pass the subsidies for folks' insurance this past year. So the number to join the conversation is 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. And yeah, I think, you know, phone lines are open. Definitely want to hear from you. And are you talking to, you know, your own kids or young people you know who could be eligible for this draft and what it means, about what it means to serve in a conflict where the objectives seem more spiritual than strategic, right? And how do we as a community, how do we protect our own when these fanatics are beating the drum and they have total, you know, with Trump, they have, and with Congress not stepping up to assert its power over the purse, you know, and to declare war, you know, they're using all the resources of this country, of our country, to basically murder people in the Middle East and all of them feel some sort of prophetic vision, right? And I'll talk a bit more about that. But yeah, please do call in if you're a veteran, a parent, or a student, or just a concerned neighbor of a student. Yeah, please do call in. The number here is 503-231-8187. Where do you stand in this and Oregon's role in this escalating crisis? Before we get into all the prophecy talk, I wanted to talk a bit about what's the cost? What's the ongoing cost of this war? And we're going to pivot to some raw economic data that the White House is definitely trying to downplay. As of this morning, we are no longer just looking at a regional skirmish. We are looking at a quadruple supply shock, right? As you know, as you may have heard, Iran has begun the mining of the Strait of Hormuz, which is an extremely narrow waterway. I think it's like 30 kilometers wide. Basically, it's very close to Dubai. And it carries 20% of the world's oil. Intelligence reports seem to confirm that they have the capability to deploy hundreds more of these mines within days, right? I've heard the Trump administration claiming that they are shooting boats that are that could be used to deploy these mines and destroying them. I don't know how successful that is. But I think even the threat of such an action has been enough to basically completely prevent any traffic going through, and also the rise in insurance companies don't want to issue insurance. It's extremely expensive. And it's very narrow and narrow strait, as we mentioned. And of course, oil tankers are huge and do not have a great deal of maneuverability. And so, would even ship owners be willing to risk their ships to do this? It seems the answer is no, right? And so this is not just a tactical escalation, but it's also an economic tripwire, right? Oil prices have already spiked $219 a barrel. And domestic gas prices are projected to climb significantly higher in the coming days as the pump catches up to these crude costs. And I should say that it did spike, and then the other day, I think Trump immediately said, "Oh no, I'm the war's over, we won," you know, and stuff. And then for some reason, the markets believe him still to this day, and immediately the price went down again. But then, of course, the next day, Hexup was talking about bombing them into oblivion, which, of course, is a war crime, right? And this isn't just about the oil, right? We are also facing a simultaneous collapse in natural gas. As you may know, the world's largest LNG plant in Qatar has shut down following recent strikes. And that threatens the global supply deficit that collapsed months, right? And fertilizer, of course, Iran supplies 11% of the world's ammonia and 5% of its urea, a critical component for global agriculture. And with 45% of the world's urea trade passing through that now shut down strait, fertilizer prices have surged 25% in just over a week. And there is a direct correlation between fertilizer prices and crop yields. This means the inflation we feel, the gas is coming to the grocery store shelf tomorrow. Basically, we'll have fewer crops grown, less food, and so Trump is impacting that as well. all too high the Epstein files, right? We all have to pay the price for this nudge and get away with serious harm against children, right? And aluminum, alleged harm against aluminum, and then also key Gulf belchers have declared force majeure threatening a global industrial slowdown. So meanwhile, you know, the Trump is trying to tell everyone the market will heal, and his administration is ignoring the reality of our current financial position. And unlike in 2022, the Federal Reserve has no room to maneuver. We are dealing with negative payroll growth and tariff compressed margins. And so when you add to this an energy shock, a food shock, an industrial metal shock, you're not looking at a market correction. You're looking at a final dismantling of the global supply chain. So, So this is Trump is willing to make this sacrifice, he says, and to sacrifice our financial security and even potentially force our children into a draft to sustain his illegal war. And this is all for a geopolitical agenda that even our strongest allies in Europe are not on board for. They are not fully supporting this. I think the UK finally agreed to allow the U.S. to use some of its airfields and stuff, but that was, not a very strong support. So, so we have the Strait of Hormuz effectively closed. And the U.S., U.S. officials have confirmed the Navy has not escorted any vessels through the Strait, despite the administration's rhetoric saying so, and that as bond yields are, it's signaling investors have lost faith in this wartime recovery narrative. So, yeah, please call again, call in. The number here is 503-231-8187. And I'm Jacqueline Keeler, and this is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio on KBOO. And so today we're asking a question that should keep every parent in Oregon awake and young person. Is the U.S. government currently going to use our children to fulfill an apocalyptic religious prophecy? And I want to play an audio clip right now from Jeffrey Sachs, who notes that he was being interviewed by Piers Morgan, and he is quoted saying, "We're heading into World War III," and he's raising the alarm about extremist Christian elements in the U.S. military who embrace the idea of Armageddon. You may have heard the reporting last week that military commanders are telling our troops that Trump is bringing on the second coming of Jesus Christ. And so let's play that clip.
Tehran. Can you play that clip? Speaking on the phone with absolutely desperate people in Tehran in the last 48 hours, and it's carpet bombing, and they're killing indiscriminately. So this is a disaster that is not likely to go away. No one's claiming in Israel or the U.S. that it's likely to go away. And the consequences for the world will be utterly awful. We have a lot of Americans. We have a very particular society. We have a lot of Americans who are saying, move on, this is Armageddon coming, this is this is the promised end of the world. We are hearing lots of reports about this being preached in the military. We're seeing a lot of people who believe that the worse it gets, the closer we are to the second coming of Jesus Christ. And that's a motivating factor in the United States, I have to tell you. It's a significant part of Mr. Trump's base. And so bad news is not necessarily deterrence. It may just mean escalation to Armageddon. It is a grim situation that we're in. We've not seen anything like it, actually, since World War II. This is even beyond the Iraq War. They then had, I won't say the dignity, But they then had the impulse to hide the motivations. Here, there is no impulse to hide the motivations. It's just complete kill anybody kill everybody and overturn this society of 100 million people and an ancient society of 5,000 years. So it's dreadful. We're heading to World War III, and we're being led by extraordinarily violent governments in Israel and the United States. And you'll hear a great defense in a moment by a skilled Israeli diplomat. But what they are doing to the world is absolutely...
Okay, so I think that cut off. That was Jeffrey Sachs, a former special advisor to the UN Secretary General. He was being interviewed by Piers Morgan. I don't usually cite things in that show, but that was a very interesting statement. And he was raising alarm about the extremist Christian elements in the U.S. military who embrace the idea of Armageddon. And he also noted that the illegal war in Iran is a kind of mass murder of civilians. We have a caller, Santiago.
Good morning.
Are you still there? Morning. Good morning.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. I mean, I don't know. Like, we in high school, we spent a lot of time like harassing military recruiters. So, like, you know, because I mean, the fact of the matter is that, like, you know, I mean, even if there isn't a draft, the fact is that even if the draft hasn't been mandatory, the fact that, like, you know, that, like, so many places that they go to recruit are impoverished, almost kind of makes it a draft. You know what I mean? Because they try to keep it, hang on a second, because they try to keep it to where, you know, people are forced to go in, like, out of economic disparity. So, I mean, the draft, I mean, ultimately, if they tried to do it, it would basically just level the playing field because it would make it, they'd make it a requirement for everyone. But I mean, not that I'm in favor of it, but it's like the fact of the matter is that, like, the you know, we've had it, that we've, it's been more of an economic draft up until this point. So, you know, but I mean, we just gotta be teaching our kids, you know, that, like, you know, that, you know, I mean, and it's hard because, you know, while we can look at what the right is doing as, like, you know, playing into, like, a very dangerous game of, like, chasing unicorns, the fact of the matter is that just being in America is steeped in so much fairy tale BS that, you know, it's like, I mean, it's kind of like how I'll make fun of, like, atheists who say that they don't believe in God, but they still believe in, like, liberal democracy, you know? Like who has it been democratic for since the founding? I mean, certainly not for us indigenous folks, and certainly not for black folks, you know? So, I mean, it's like, you know, it's like there's this Gordian knot of fairy tales that exist because America is a bourgeois nation that exists off the backs of not only, like, the poor people within the imperial core, but also people within the imperial periphery. So it's like, I mean, it's gonna, I don't know, it's that seems like what we're fighting against right now. I mean, America is an empire in decline, not unlike Rome. A lot of the military expansion we're seeing is just the U.S. engaging in micromilitarism as a way to, like, establish, like, some form of hard power in the world. But eventually, just like Rome, they're going to spread their forces too thin, and it's going to cause it to collapse in on itself. But these guys can much easier see the end of the world than they can, like, the end of capitalist exploitation. So, I don't know. It's a big deal. You still there?
Yeah, I agree. I'm going to go over a little bit some of these prophecies, and they all. It's interesting that Trump stated claims to take out Iran, but the prophecies that we're seeing coming out of the evangelical movement and also from Israel and Jewish tradition, really, to bring about the Messiah, whether it's Jesus or the Jewish Messiah. It all depends on the rebuilding of this temple of Solomon, and also depends on U.S. losing the war. Like, that's actually part of the prophecies. And so it's interesting that, these groups are not actually cheering for us to win the war. And I'm also going to go over a bit of a study that came out by examined Christian nationalist ideology and from the Public Religion Research Institute, which actually shows how deeply Christian nationalism is core to U.S. identity. And I think it's actually pretty shocking. So hopefully I'll be able to go through that in the last quarter of the show. But you're absolutely right on all counts.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the biggest thing honestly, the fairy tale is like, because you've talked about that before too, like the national mythos. I mean, it's like, in order for us to be able to see what the real pathway is, we have to get, a lot of it. And I'll say, man, it's mostly white folks, you see a lot of the resistance movements against Trump. They're resisting. They're a lot of them, like, when you really break it down, they're resisting on, like, procedural grounds. Even like as far as you could say, like, the National Democratic Leadership, because they want the war with Iran. They don't want their hands bloody, but they certainly want it. And having Trump being belligerent and listening to a bunch of religious, a bunch of religious weirdos, I mean, it gives them the benefit of having gone to war with Iran without having to say that they're the one who pulled the trigger. But at the same time, the point is that, like, a lot of these resistance movements, they are, they're being led. At the highest levels, they're being directed by the Democratic National Convention. And while it may not look like that on the local scene, we have to get away from trying to say we need to bring back American democracy, because ultimately, even when things were good, it still wasn't great for Black and brown folks. It still wasn't great for queer and trans folks. I mean, at the very least, they were leaving us, things were peaceful, but things were still violent and tumultuous. It's like the idea of, it's like the idea of actually having, like, liberation movements is scary to America itself, because they depend so much on exploited labor. That's why slavery has been moved to the jails instead of the cotton fields, because ultimately they still need some workforce to exploit. It's the same reason why we're dealing with why we've been dealing with immigrant rights, since 1849, 1850s with the Treaty de Guadalupe Hidalgo, because, like, America needs an exploitable workforce. And if they give all of our brothers and sisters from other countries immediate citizenship, that cuts off their ability to be able to exploit that labor. And it's,
this really makes me want to get into some of the things I have laid out for the show. I probably have too much for the show, but I really want to get into that study that came up. Yeah, no, it's fine. Let me get some of the stuff through, some of the stuff, and then I will, So thank you so much, Santiago. Those are really good points to make. And very, very pertinent what we're talking about. And I definitely would like to do a whole show on certain elements you just discussed. So reviewing really quickly Jeffrey Sachs' critique of the war, he's a renowned economist, and he hasn't minced words. He has categorized the U.S. and Israeli military strikes against Iran as brazen, illegal attacks that constitute a direct assault on the United Nations Charter. He has specifically condemned the targeting of civilian infrastructure, including reports of schools being struck, labeling these events as mass murder rather than tactical military engagements. And, of course, we hear that the U.S. or Israel had struck a desalination plant, and then that was led to another desalination attack by Iran on the GCC countries. And Sachs' critique goes deeper than just the strikes themselves. He argues that this entire conflict is a, quote, war of choice, manufactured by a political alliance between Benjamin Netanyahu and the current U.S. administration. He has pointedly asked why the international community, including leaders in Europe, are falling in line behind a policy that he describes as serving the interests of a, quote, mad emperor, rather than the safety and stability of the global order. And so, and of course, a particularly chilling part of Sark's analysis is, concerns that we are raising this morning about the U.S. military itself. He's frequently warned about the influence of what he calls the military-industrial complex and the ideological capture of our foreign policy. And these extreme elements he's describing our system completely divorced from constitutional diplomacy and instead fueled by a cycle of perpetual ideological-driven interventionism. And so that's sort of what he... It's not in that little audio snippet I had, but he has a much more comprehensive critique of this far-right political agenda. And so we have another caller. Hi, that's Hanjin. Good morning.
Hi, Jacqueline.
Morning.
I want to carry on with the thought I had last week, which was that they should be voting, like the fact that they're voting on a law that is actually in the Constitution, okay? So they
yeah,
have to say again that only Congress can do this, all right? But my point now is that what they really should do, because I think about these things, I keep trying to make them, you know, actually work logically, if you will. Okay, they really need to do, it should be an amendment to the Constitution, and it would state that only the president has the power to start war, to commence wars. And then, and of course, that would take two-thirds majority, right? But here's the deal. If that law last week had passed, of course, the president, if that person in the White House, I can't call him the president, would veto it, okay? So then it still would have taken two-thirds. So, but at least it would be honest.
Yes.
And everybody voting against that, voting for that would obvious, you see what I'm saying? It would make it more real, very real, actually. I'm listening to French TV here, and I'm not listening now, but just earlier they mentioned, I think, 7 ships have been hit in the Straits of Hormuz. And they're talking about mines, although they also showed some drone strikes. On a funny note, I wanted to mention, I heard this on KBOO the other day. It was an alternative, radio, AR. But one woman was talking about, a question came up about women's successes, right? And so she has, of course, many, but she goes, my favorite is a very old one. It goes back to the 1800s, I believe, where wealthy English folk would go to Ireland to collect rents. And some people decided, these women mostly decided, that if they didn't serve him, if they didn't shine his shoes, if they didn't, you know, wash and clean his house and clothes, he wouldn't have a good time there, and he might just not want to come back. And it worked, and that's where the word boycott comes from. This started with a gentleman, or if you can call him that, Captain Boycott was his name. So that's where that...
Oh, wow. Interesting.
That's off.
Washerwomen
of the world unite. it won't go anywhere. It'll get dirty very fast.
Okay. Yeah, thank you, Hanjin. That's a very interesting story. But I got to get back to the military issue with fundamentalist craziness right now. But thank you for that comment.
I'd like to make one last thing if I can.
Okay. So last week, a whistleblower report from the Military Religious Freedom Foundation sent shockwaves through the Pentagon. And I think I had a segment on this last week as well. Over 110 service members have come forward alleging that their commanders are framing this war with Iran as, and I'm quoting here, part of God's divine plan for Armageddon, right? And so this isn't just about personal faith, what individual beliefs, but we are talking about the Secretary of Defense, he likes to call himself the Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, who has explicitly framed this conflict as a holy war. In a recent briefing, he mocked prophetic Islamic delusions while simultaneously hosting monthly prayer services at the Pentagon led by pastors who advocate for Christian nationalism. So Heitzel has even gone as far as to suggest that dying for this Christian nation is a path to salvation. I'm not kidding here. So let's be clear that our military is being reshaped into a crusader force, right? And the constitutional wall between church and state, you know, hasn't just been breached, it's being demolished by the very people who, I should note, also hold the keys to the nuclear codes, right? And so there is a lot of rhetoric coming out of the administration and from Netanyahu, and I guess Netanyahu recently invoked the Amalekites, a biblical call to a total erasure of an enemy, right? And so we see them here using the language of the Old Testament to justify a 21st century slaughter, right? And so, and of course, you know, military draft is on the table, and I liked what Santiago just said about right now we have an economic draft. Maybe a military draft would be more equal, right? And then there are also moved to automate selective service registration in the latest defense bill. So they are basically preparing the machinery to take young people and send them to the desert to fight for a biblical destiny that I don't think any of us ever voted for. So, actually we have another caller. Hi, Artie. You are on KBOO.
Hello there, Jacqueline.
Hey, hello. Good morning.
You can hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. I'd like to address this issue of the theology of the end times and scriptures, and which scriptures are accurate or even, you know, how scriptures are being misinterpreted by this prediction of Jesus coming back. That's what I'd like to talk to you about. So, I'm recommending people read the book of Joshua again. So that's after the Genesis, Exodus, Deuteronomy, and Leviticus, fifth book. And it talks about the original entrance of Israel, the escape from Egypt and entrance into the land that they gave the name of Israel. But it was before then Palestine. And when the people of Palestine went through a famine, that's when they were, they sold themselves into slavery in Egypt and lived there for a century. And you still with me?
Yeah.
No. So they were actually, when they decided to retire to slavery and they learned agricultural means to you know, how to store water, how to, you know, cultivate crops, and you could have a stable food source. So then they said, no, we're going back. So in the book of one of the early Bibles, the Exodus, tells about the pilot Philistine, the Canaanites. It was a warrior culture. There were these city states, and they all had kings, and they were all brutal. And when Israelites had soldiers of their own, they went in and took out the kings first, not the people, just the kings.
Yeah,
and the soldiers.
I think I understand you're going through a lot of this, and it's So what does this have to do with discussion
I mean, scriptures say that it was crossing the Jordan, not the Euphrates, and these Zionists are saying that this whole land from the Euphrates to the Nile is what they're talking about. That's not accurate scripturally.
Okay.
The land of Israel is from the Jordan River, supposedly, to the sea. But it had all kinds of people, and the scripture did not say God gave them that land. God said, you can live here, mainly because it was their historical beginnings. They were Palestinians to begin with. So there was no giving the land from the Euphrates to the Nile. It was that they could live in peace.
And the
thing they did was they made an agreement with the peoples there, the tribal peoples, that if they believed in the one God, same as the, you know, theology. That became the origin, the origins of Islam. Islam's Allah and Jehovah are the same God.
Yes.
So people twist the scriptures, you're right, for purely humanistic reasons, greed, and to lead people astray, control.
Yeah.
So the scriptures.
Okay, thank you, Artie.
Same
reason. Yeah, I wanted
Joshua again, and it.
Yeah, let me actually. The new King. Yes, thank you so much. Yeah, I'm going to go really briefly through some of the things they're talking about here with the kind of scriptural sort of things they're pushing. So if you listen to the people in the pulpits, they reference this thing called Gog and Magog. I'm not going to go into a lot on that, but. There is a specific strain of evangelical prophecy, sort of by figures like John Hagee, echoed right now in the Pentagon, in the halls of the Pentagon, and that identifies Iran as Persia from the book of Ezekiel. In this worldview, a war with Iran isn't a diplomatic failure, it's actually a required precursor to the rapture and the return of Jesus. And so they aren't trying to actually prevent Armageddon. They are trying to schedule it. And so this is our own Pentagon, right? And so this brings us to, Pete Hegseth, and also his Douglas Wilson, right, who is now in D.C., opened up a parish or whatever there. And for decades, Wilson has been an arch conservative fixture in Idaho, right nearby here in Moscow, Idaho, and he has this thing called the Moscow Mood. It's a brand of militant Christian nationalism, which has now taken root in the Pentagon. With Pete Hegseth, the defense secretary, aka self-titled Secretary of War, he is not just a fan, he is a member of a church affiliated with Wilson's denomination. And just last month, Hegseth invited Wilson to lead the Pentagon's monthly prayer service. We're talking about a man who has openly advocated for a, quote, Christian theocracy and whose movement promotes a rigid patriarchal hierarchy, right? I think Hegseth actually shared on social media a video of this Douglas Wilson guy actually saying that women shouldn't have the right to vote, right? So Hegseth, when he's in the Pentagon, he's saying we derive our strength from the word of God, quote, he is using Wilson's playbook. And they are together reshaping our U.S. military into what looks less like a constitutional defense force and more like a private crusader army, right? And so this, recently on Sunday, White House Press Secretary Carolyn Leavitt was asked point blank about a military draft. And her response was, she said, President Trump wisely does not remove options off the table, right? And they are calling it maintaining flexibility, whatever that means. This is a reality draft on the table, right? So evangelicals often cite Ezekiel 38:39, which describes a coalition led by Gog, often interpreted as Russia and Persia, Iran, attacking Israel only to be destroyed by divine intervention, right? So Douglas Wilson, he is the founder of the Communion of Reformed Evangelical Churches, CREC, I guess, CREC. He has this public amen to Wilson's All of Christ for All of Life model signals a deep alignment with Wilson's goal of Christianizing every aspect of American life, including the military. And so, let's have another audio that I want to play here. When we play the report that I had mentioned earlier, that we're going to play that audio clip right now.
Nationalism has gained unprecedented visibility inside the U.S. military. The nation's Secretary of Defense has hosted Christian prayer services inside the Pentagon and attends weekly White House Bible studies. He's openly framed geopolitical conflict through the lens of Christian civilization. Tattooed across his chest is the Jerusalem cross. It's a symbol that was the coat of arms of the Crusader Kingdom of Jerusalem after the year 1099, and it's long associated with the idea of Christian warriors reclaiming the Holy Land.
It's Ken Harbaugh with the Midas Touch Network. A major report has just been released detailing the extent to which Christian nationalist ideology has permeated American society. I spoke with one of the lead researchers behind that report shortly before America launched its attack on Iran. We've been holding that interview to cover breaking news, but given the almost messianic fervor with which Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth has described the campaign against Iran, I think it's a good time to talk about the scourge of Christian nationalism more broadly. It has long been a consistent but seemingly fringe feature of the American political right, but it now seems to be infecting the highest levels of the Pentagon. Here was Pete Hegseth at the National Prayer Breakfast last month.
America was founded as a Christian nation. It remains a Christian nation in our DNA if we can keep it. And as public officials, we have a sacred duty 250 years on to glorify him. We talk a lot about peace through strength. At the War Department, we see ourselves as the strength department. But we also need to remember that we derive our strength through faith and through truth and through the Word of God.
My guest today is Dr. Robert Jones, founder and president of the Public Religion Research Institute, whose landmark research on Christian nationalism is sounding alarms about the movement's growing hold on American democracy. I can't think of a more important time to have this conversation than when America is engaged in what some in the administration consider to be a holy war in the Middle East. Here's our conversation. Robbie, thanks so much for joining us. At various points reading this report, had to do a double take, given some of the findings and just how embedded Christian nationalism is in not just our political culture, but our culture writ large. And I guess I have to start by asking or by challenging my own assumptions about Christian nationalism as a fringe movement. According to your findings, it is in no way the kind of fringe movement that we sometimes talk about as being outside of the mainstream of politics. It is fully embedded in our culture.
Well, I think that's right. And, you know, when you have this term Christian nationalism, which is a term that sociologists have developed to talk about this movement in its current incarnation, but it's actually quite old in American history. So if we kind of go back, right, this is the same animating movement that we had, for example, with the idea of manifest destiny, right, with Christianity and civilization that was marching across the continent, right? And it was the thing that motivated the genocide of Native Americans, it was the thing that motivated the enslavement of Africans. But it was all about this idea that this little plot of land in North America was intended by God to be a kind of promised land for European Christians. And so it has a very old history, even though this term that we have for it, its current manifestation is quite new. But we find, you know, in the report, just to give you a quick top line, that it's a little more than 3 in 10 Americans that share this worldview, that are either full on adherents, that no matter what question we throw at them to measure this, they, yep, I completely agree that U.S. was intended, you know, to be a Christian nation, law should be based on the Bible, like those kinds of questions. Another 2 in 10 are sympathetic to that worldview. So it's about 3 in 10 Americans who are either, we classify as either Christian nationalism adherents or sympathetic.
So that was a report that interview featured Ken Harbaugh of the Midas Touch Network in conversation with Dr. Robert Jones, founder of the Public Religion Research Institute, discussing a major report that they released last month titled Mapping Christian Nationalism Across the 50 States. And basically, that's just a clip of the longer interview. But what they found was that, Christian nationalism is not just a fringe concept. but actually an embedded ideology within American culture, and apparently now the highest levels of the U.S. military. And so the some of the takeaways from the interview, the report finds that 3 in 10 Americans are either adherents, 11%, or sympathizers, 21%, of Christian nationalism. Dr. Jones emphasizes this is a statistically, I have a hard time with that word, but a consistent worldview, not just a reaction to a single political issue. And he echoes to, he describes the permission structure. Jones argues that the rise of Donald Trump and the MAGA movement provide a permission structure for open expression of these views. He describes the correlation between support for Christian nationalism and support for Trump as absolutely linear, that's a quote, absolutely, at both the national and state levels. And he describes that, Christian nationalism is deeply intertwined with whiteness, right, and white supremacy. And that's something that Santiago brought up earlier in his call. And he traces it back to historical concepts like manifest destiny, arguing that it frames the U.S. as a divinely intended land for European Christians, where all others hold a second-class status. And yes, we've been seeing that in the violence of ICE, to take out brown and black immigrants, and anyone who stands up or is an immigrant even, and also the infiltration. He discusses the infiltration of the Pentagon. Defense Secretary Hegseth's role in normalizing this ideology within the military. Hegseth's public rhetoric, as you heard, is also framing geopolitical conflict as a holy war. And of course, he's hosting those prayer services at the Pentagon with Douglas Wilson, and is evidence that the institution is being reshaped to align with the crusader-like mindset. And so, and there is this danger of violence. Jones points out this current strain is truly dangerous. It has a body count, which, of course, he was speaking to the killings through the immigration enforcement, and he also argues that now we have people being murdered in the Middle East to fulfill this prophecy. He argues that this worldview frames immigrants and non-white populations as an existential threat to white Christian hegemony, and it creates a justification for political violence and state actions such as the current ICE operations and the Iran war to restore what they view as their God-given hierarchy. And one of the report's most surprising findings is that 13% of non-Christians are classified as Christian national sympathizers or adherents. And so Dr. Jones explains that this is cultural Christianity, where individuals, even if they do not attend church, adopt the nationalist ideology as a form of identity politics or as a cultural stance against modern social progressivism. So that report is pretty scary, and I will probably, the title of the report is A Christian Nation, Understanding the Threat of Christian Nationalism to American Democracy and Culture. And this is by the PRI Brookings and Christian Nationalism Survey. So that's sort of what we're looking at there. Why this matters for this war and for the PRI report highlights that Christian nationalism thrives during periods of quote economic stability, war, and heightened immigration, right? By positioning the Iran conflict as a holy war, the administration is effectively using this ideology as a recruitment and morale tool. Okay, there is a deep concern about this, obviously, and we have a kind of a two-tier military going on here situation where you have the prophetic force where units are being led by commanders who view this war as a biblical mandate, right, where loyalty to a divine end times agenda would supersede the U.S. Constitution, right? And then we have, and of course we have everyone else, service members, including those from minority religious groups or secular backgrounds, who feel marginalized, harassed, or coerced by the proselytizing rhetoric of their superiors, right? And so, so that's so what we have going on here. With a few minutes left, please do feel free to call in and tell me what you think about all this. It's number here is 503-231-8187, and there is also as I mentioned before, Israel and has its own eschatology regarding this and the rebuilding of the temple, right? So there's the evangelical end times aspect of this prophecy, but there's also the Jewish perspective on the temple and the messianic era, which they believe has not occurred yet. And so they're not looking at bringing back Jesus, but their actual Messiah. And in mainstream Jewish thought, the rebuilding of the third temple is seen as a central hope, right? But it is not necessarily linked to the arrival of the Messiah. The expectations of the Messiah, a descendant of King David, will arrive and naturally usher in an era of peace. But in the other traditions, it's a little different. And so, and those are the traditions that Netanyahu has been sort of signaling in his discussion about the war. And as I mentioned before, Netanyahu has brought up the Amalek narrative, right? The biblical enemy of Amalek, whom the Israelites were commanded to destroy completely. Netanyahu is, by citing this, he's elevating this conflict from a geopolitical dispute to a moral, almost cosmic crusade, right? So this rhetoric is designed to harden public resolve and marginalize dissent by framing opposition as a failure to protect the state against an existential evil threat. And they've been naming these things Operation Rising, Roaring Lion. The naming of these military campaigns serves as a bridge for evangelical audiences by using terminology that resonates with biblical imagery. Netanyahu secures and motivates the vital Christian Zionist voting bloc in the U.S., ensuring consistent diplomatic and military support. And I think he actually had, this past year, he had some kind of event where he met with evangelical influencers, social media influencers, and told them that they were soldiers in this war to protect Israel. And that actually happened. I think you can see that on online. So the Netanyahu government's Iran policy has found a willing partner with the current U.S. administration. This is all about that. And the crazy thing that I think is not discussed enough is the fact that there is, for this all to work, for this bringing up the Messiah back, the U.S., the United States, has to basically lose the war. And so, it's crazy that our military leaders are all excited about this when it actually means that they will have to lose, right? I don't know how we got here exactly, and obviously there is a longer arc to this, which, as the analysis of Dr. Robert Jones and the PR, the Public Research Religion Research Institute found, is that it definitely goes back to the founding of this country, and it's something I've been working on a piece about. And I'm planning a follow up book to my book Standoff, which look at these origin stories of a colonial origin story versus a native people's origin story, and how they differ and how they operate in the world. But I really wanted to take another look at that, and particularly look at the way in which this whole American project was started from the beginning, and why it's so actively operates in the minds of people particularly people who are identified, who are white Americans, to support, to basically exclude so many people and to feel like the rest of us have to wait till they get their wealth and they're all billionaires, you know. And I was reviewing, on Saturday, I was reviewing some of the support for the Iran war. I saw a, I was looking at the data behind a an NPR Marist poll that came out last week showing, you know, that these 40% of Americans support the war and 60% oppose. I was breaking down that numbers, and it was pretty clear that, you know, the Republicans are still at, like, you know, 80% approval ratings, and I broke it down by race, and definitely the majority of those people saying they support that are white, right? It's just looking at, a lot of these polls don't even break out race and in their findings, but this one did. I was able to kind of really get some numbers from that. And so, you know, the polling and this study show there is a direct correlation between the concept of whiteness and really it's, what is this, the concept of whiteness itself is, you know, bringing about a huge conflict. I don't want to call it World War III or Armageddon, but it's very serious, and I think we should look at it far more closely. Thank you so much. This has been Jacqueline Keeler with KBOO at Wednesday Talk Radio, and I will be back tomorrow morning to have a little more discussion on this. And so please do call in tomorrow. Thank you. Oh, we have one more call on Maddie. Do we have time for Maddie? We're at 1 minute. Sorry, I didn't do that to Maria.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM.
This is KBOO Portland, volunteer-powered community radio.
Spring is in the air. The world is getting ready for its annual revival of itself. Embrace Mother Nature on that journey with the help of psychedelic rock to ricochet you through time.